Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my goodness, folks. This is the inaugural call-in period for WPR Rebuttal. And just for a record, the Blog Talk Radio server was having problems. In fact, it even said so when I called in. We're having technical difficulties. Please try again. So honest to goodness, folks, I had to call in again. So again, this is WPR Rebuttal on air, live from Wisconsin. Now, I just want to also reiterate, too, that, we will have an open call period later on today. I just want to kind of set the agenda. First and foremost, this is the most important thing that needs to be addressed here, is that it turns out that with the service package I chose, which is the, just a standard monthly, we can only go 30 minutes at a time. So there'll be little breaks, every half hour where I will have to end the episode, and then I'll restart it. So just so you know, bear with me, and then we can get through this. There's no sense in having to pay Blog Talk Radio like $60 a month just to have, 2 hours at a time podcast. We can chunk this content into four podcasts of half an hour each. So that's my modification to the business plan. Where there's a will, there's a way. Senator JPO has a will, and there is a way, as mentioned, by just breaking up what would be a continuous two-hour podcast, instead breaking it down into more or less four podcasts to have an equivalent length. So, okay, so our first topic today is how Bernie Sanders managed to defeat Hillary Clinton in the Wisconsin primary. So I'm just going to examine that based on a WPR article that's from March 24th by Chuck Quinbach. And essentially the whole gist of it is, Clinton's daughter, Chelsea, visited a Milwaukee branch, the campaign office, and was trying to drum up support from the local. It really fell short. And so if you look at the photo, again, going to the WPR article by Chuck Quinbach from March 24th about Hillary campaigning in Milwaukee. So in the photo, we have only maybe 12.5% of the audience is actually black. But Quinbach was writing the article, too. Apparently, he's both a writer and a photographer. But he states, the campaign stop was the predominantly African-American Milwaukee neighborhood. So if what Quinbach is saying is true, then they just weren't turning out for Hillary, despite her being, putatively more popular amongst the black population. And we know that from Sanders' 13.5 percentage point trouncing of Clinton in the April 6th primary. Well, I mean, the urban support just wasn't enough. The rest of the state came out in droves, and they pretty much voted Hillary back to where she came from. So, but why is that, though? So some investigation on my part. First off, the low black turnout in densely populated Milwaukee was kind of an indicator of the general malaise that has set in based on Rodham Clinton's attempts to go and spearhead various initiatives. And by the way, why did Hillary Clinton stop calling herself Hillary Rodham Clinton, right? She used to do it all the time in the mid-90s, but no longer. And yet, few people in the media have picked up on this. I think there's a reason behind this, too, why Hillary decided to drop the Rodham part of her surname. Remember when Hillary Rodham Clinton was talking about health care reform in the mid-1990s? She wanted universal health care back then. And, of course, that failed. It never really went anywhere. I would say that the contract with America and the Republican side outlasted the Hillary Rodham Clinton-led push for universal health care. And, you know, you could argue, well, the PPACA, you know, Patient Protection and, you know, Health Care Accountability Act, you know, that was not exactly universal health care. No, the PPACA was merely a huge subsidy for health care insurers. It did not actually go and cheapen health care in terms of, you know, cost of service delivery by any means. No way. But for the most part, I see, you know, Hillary dropping the Rodham part of her name as a vain attempt to disown and try to make the public forget about her failed attempts at leadership when she was the first lady, so to speak. So, and we were going back to her stint as New York Senator. That was like 2001 through 2009. Well, look at the bills that she sponsored. You go to govtrack.us. That's govtrack.us. And if you go and look at, you know, the bills that she sponsored while Senator from New York, you see that practically every bill failed. It died in session. So, you know, I mean, she does not really have any record of efficacy. It's just a bunch of Hillary hype. That's all it boils down to. And the people who support Sanders tend to do their research. They tend to be more intellectual, and they just want to get past the bullocks and get down to the truth. And the truth is that, and especially while Senator Hillary Clinton was not efficacious at all. I mean, she was about as effective as an underemployed college graduate trying to get, you know, an office job after he's been temping in a manual labor job for a few years. It's not going to happen. So, on to our stuff here. Looking through my notes. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, yeah. So, some quotations about what Chelsea said. Again, I'm relying upon this WPR report by Chuck Quinback. But so, you know, according to Chelsea, there are a few big talking points that Hillary wants to try to capitalize upon. And here's quoting Chelsea. Whether around college affordability or health care reform or criminal justice, I think my mom has a stronger record. What? No, she don't. Sick. During her 8 years as a U.S. Senator, nearly every bill Hillary Clinton sponsored died in session. Furthermore, her attempt to lead health care reform in the mid-1990s bombed. Speaking of bombing, Hillary failed as miserably then as she did in trying to manage the political fallout from the assault on U.S. Embassy in Benghazi in Libya, having done nothing to prevent it. And that, of course, was she was Secretary of State. And she blamed the Benghazi fiasco upon a YouTube video, but there was actually CIA information that said that, hey, it's just part of the Arab Spring, more or less. So you can't really blame such a broad political movement and its tributaries. You can't really blame that on one incisive video, because the straw that breaks the camel's back politically is not just going to be some propaganda from another country. It's going to be something that's internal. It's going to be something that causes you know, civil strife. And I'll put it this way. You know, if you go and look at the civil wars in the Middle East, they're really not started by a flashpoint video from outside that area. I mean, if you look at the Levant, which is, of course, it's northeast of northern Africa. So I'll use northern Africa examples instead. So if you look at Egypt, you know, that was just basically, you know, some of the youth, although youth are more impressionable by not having as much experience as their elders, I mean, they are not just going to go and latch on to and be led ideologically by what one of their expatriates says in a video that is uploaded and produced in a different country. It's just, you know, they fancy themselves free thinkers. So why don't they think for themselves and not be led into violence by just some expatriate who left your country, says? And again, the assault on the embassy was caused by tensions boiling over from high unemployment and from a lack of concessions from established political power. And, you know, the embassy was just pretty much a target of opportunity. And, you know, I mean, there's always some premeditation going on, but it's kind of like looking and scanning and monitoring the different opportunities. It's like, well, if the guard is let down at any time, then you're going to storm the Bastille, so to speak. But moving on from Benghazi here. Here's another quotation from the WPR. Okay, so, oh my gosh. Okay, so college affordability has it so spoken quite often by the Clinton camp. It misses a point entirely, as do our Hillary's highlights miss the main idea. To borrow Bill Clinton's term, it's the economy, stupid. So, I mean, Hillary is forgetting that it's not just the availability of education or other alleged means of self-improvement. It's about opportunities beyond getting educated. It's like, well, if you go and you look at various reports about the college graduate unemployment rate, and you'll see various numbers, usually in a neighborhood between 40-45% in that neighborhood. And while you might say, that's pretty good because, you know, over half the majority of college graduates are employed, I mean, that's not going to be for long, though. The underemployment rate of college graduates keeps rising. And, so if you go to any report by the Federal Reserve, I mean, it could be Federal Reserve of St. Louis, Federal Reserve of New York. They have their different quarterly reports, and every now and then they'll have metrics specifically about unemployment of college graduates. And this is confirmed by an analysis by Inside Higher Ed. It's a website that pretty much focuses on higher education issues. But, okay, so they've noticed that the college graduate unemployment has been peaking in ever larger spikes since the 1991 recession. So pretty much 92, the unemployment rate of college graduates is, no, not just unemployment, it is total unemployment amongst all college graduates. So the jobless but seeking a job incidence for college graduates has been spiking ever higher peaks from 2.5% in 1992 going up. And, you know, being subsiding during the dot-com bubble and then rising up again in 2002, it was either about 5%. And then it really shot up, though, with this. In 2009, it was up to 11%. So based on that, if you look every 9 to 10 years, it shoots up again. So I would say probably around 2020, the unemployment rate for college graduates would be, let's say, over 15%, more than likely. And in terms of underemployment rate, well, that just keeps on getting worse. That's not been declining consistently by any means. So, again, I'd say that by that time in 2020, you're not only going to have an unemployment rate of over 15% for college graduates, but also an underemployment rate of over 50%. And that will be the turning point in terms of the young adults and their parents realizing that, hey, a four-year degree is not necessarily the best career preparation method. Neither would be the most reliable. It's definitely losing a lot of faith and the trust that, you know, higher education used to have in the public eye. and I dare say a legitimation crisis is upon higher education. But again, that is something that, I'm gathering more data on it. So, I mean, that will be like a special episode in itself. But for now, I'm just showing why, you know, the Hillary Rodham Clinton talking points just aren't hitting home like she thought they would, especially not in Wisconsin, not even in Milwaukee. So, what else here? So, the lack of emphasis on jobs creation, which has pretty much gone to the wayside as a policy plank since the putative end of the Great Recession, then as far as Clinton is concerned, Milwaukee can continue to rust away. Because as it stands, half the black adult men in Milwaukee are stuck outside the lawful workforce. They're unable to get hired, and usually not for lack of trying. Now, we have so many local degree mills, Milwaukee, Parkside, Herzing College, Lakeland College, all those churning out college degrees. But unfortunately, many of them had no better future on the jobs front, no hope for a career than since when they began their degree programs. So, here's a memo to Hillary Rodham Clinton from yours truly. Encouraging more people to enroll in college full-time is just a sneaky way to reduce the unemployment rate. Because all you're doing is you're taking those young adults and the mid-career drifters out of the workforce entirely for a good 4 or 5 years. And that's just despicable because you're not acknowledging the problem. You're trying to hide it. It's disingenuous, outright deceitful. But thanks to programs such as mine, WPR Rebuttal, the public is wisening to the con. And now would be a good time for a commercial break. Airheads are the al dente treat for you and yours. Mildly sweet with a firm but gentle texture. Airheads are a candy that I frequently buy. Airheads, they have a taste that's out of control. Dollar General is the best place to stock up on snacks, soda, sundries, and seasonal items. Staff are friendly and efficient, serving an impressive amount of customers. Dollar General, when you see the black and yellow, you've a reason to feel mellow. Aldi has been an American tradition since 1976, remaining true to its roots as all brick discount. Today's Aldi provides affordable groceries with a premium taste. Aldi, healthy food at healthy prices. So, we're back from our commercial break, and a natural segue from the disastrous Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign in Wisconsin is to talk about the temp economy, because as some of you might know, I am a temporary worker, but to put any potential employers at rest, no, I will not talk about where I work. I will not name names in terms of my employers or co-workers or anything like that. So no one should be worried about lack of privacy, but people should be worried about the economic implications of our increasingly contingent workforce. Now, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, a record high proportion, or 2% of America's workforce, are in contingent jobs. And just to clarify for our audience here, a contingent job is not expected to be around for longer than 6 months. Now, some people are perma temps, in which they, they kind of flitter from temp job to temp job, and usually it's when a staffing agency hires someone to be a temp at one place, and then their assignment ends, and then the staffing agency will give them a follow-up temp job. But again, there's no consistency. There's no permanence. There's usually no gain to know or stay at one organization, playing hopscotch pretty much. A job hopscotch where your career has no discernible future or in just continuing to go on this roulette wheel of possible work. So it's really a raw deal. I'm better than being jobless in lab cases, but again, it's just how do these people who are perma temps, how do they transition into permanent work? Now, there's kind of a perception that, if you have been jobless for a while, then you can get a temp job and then get back into the workforce that way because, you can move on up. But there are a few flaws to that thinking. One is that companies, unless the position is explicitly temp to hire, companies generally do not want to hire temps, and many of them will not even interview the temps when positions are advertised. So a temporary worker can go and find a vacancy at that company and apply. But no matter how long that temp has been working there, the company will not interview him or her for a permanent role. And that's pretty disgusting, too, because logically, the temporary worker would need less training and can hit the ground running, having done work at the organization, especially when the job applied for is just a permanent rendition of his or her temp job. So it's pretty rotten, but that's the way it goes. And if you try to talk to human resources, they'll probably just avoid talking about it. If you see them in person when you're a temp, chances are they'll smirk, say, "Well, we have your application on file," and walk away. Again, I'm not naming names, so if anyone listening to this feels offended, hey, I'm not trying to cast a stone at you specifically. I'm just describing the general practice, and if you happen to fit that description, well, it's time to reevaluate why you have that practice of not interviewing temps, of not even letting them have a chance to get benefits or anything, because from a long time permatemp, if they've been at the same job without being rotated away from a staffing agency, if that temp has been there for 18 months, error-free, 100% punctual, then why would you not want to hire that temp full-time? Huh? So what's wrong with you people in human resources? I'll have a special podcast that covers the attitude and the odd thinking of people who work in human resource departments, but that's for another day. Again, just like with higher education, it's a complex issue, and it demands a lot more time and research than what we can budget for today's broadcast. So, okay, so what does the composition of the temporary workforce look like? Well, it turns out that about 42% of those contingent jobs are in warehouse and light industrial roles. Now, that's a plurality. So if you want to break it further down, if you think about, even accountants are being temped out now. I think there's a company called Account Temps, but more or less a lot of these clerical positions, if you're a creative freelancer and you want to go and temp through an agency, then you can try Robert Half. Or if you're especially if you're a web developer, you can go to Robert Half Technology, because Robert Half International has all these different divisions. Manpower, again, they're mostly warehouse and light industrial roles too. And then you have the regional staffing agencies, which I won't name the ones in my area except for, I will name one because they're really nice to me. Okay. And obviously they deserve to be called out on. So I'll name this one, and that's Lifestyle Staffing. Yeah. That company, or at least the owner who I spoke to, is a piece of trash. And I'll tell you why. And I'm usually not this harsh, but again, this company really earned this excoriation right here. So, okay, literally last September, it was actually September 5th, 2015, and I was asking, hey, why aren't you placing me at this one client site where you're placing all these other workers who spent time where I'm working, right? Because where I'm working, They only have part-time work, but where this lifestyle staffing places people, they have full-time work. And usually where I work is a stepping stone to where these other people work. And then, you know, the rank-and-file guy, he's not necessarily a recruiter. He's more of an order taker than anything. He referred me to the owner, who's also a lead recruiter, and she told me to never call lifestyle staffing again. Well, I'm putting the metaphorical boots to her by mentioning this on air, just that you're aware of how unprofessional lifestyle staffing is. You know, I have this guy who has, again, at the time, you know, I'd been pretty much upon my anniversary, right? So punctual, error-free, perfect attendance, and, oh, no, don't call here because, you know, how dare you question my judgment? Are you calling me mental? No, that's just your negative self-image. Good God. So at any rate, I addressed the lifestyle staffing issue, and, blacklisting. just a reminder to all you staffing agency owners out here, if you tell someone, don't call my agency anymore, and I was not harassing anyone. I used polite language, and it was a one-and-done conversation, so it's not like ongoing harassing. I was not doing any of that at all, but it was just unprovoked. You know, don't call our staffing agency anymore. In other words, we won't place you. That's blacklisting, illegal under Wisconsin Statute 134.22. So lifestyle staffing, we have your number. State of Wisconsin forbids what you said to me, forbids how you're treating me, and enough is enough. So I guess expect a lawsuit. Well, we're hitting the 30-minute mark here, so I'm going to have to wrap up this podcast. But rest assured, I'm going to open up the broadcasting again. And, I'll see you guys there. Stay tuned, okay? All right, here you go.